All right, y'all, here's how to support the show. First of all, sign up for the RSS feeds so that you don't miss a show. LibertarianInstitute.org or ScottHorton.org for those. Also, subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. And sign up at Patreon. Anybody who donates a dollar or more per interview at patreon.com, you get 2 free audiobooks, and that can be including my book, narrated by me, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. So help support that way. Sign up at patreon.com/ScottHortonShow and send in $50 at scotthorton.org/donate. You get a signed copy of the book Fool's Errand, of the paperback there. And anybody who donates $100, used to be it takes 2. Now for any donation of $100, you get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Libertarian audiobooks. And there's already a whole bunch of them, and there will be more. Lifetime subscription for any $100 donation to the Scott Horton Show from Listen and Think Audio. Or you can get a silver QR code commodity disc, which is a really cool currency. Silver 1 ounce disc with a QR code tells you the instant spot price on there, and just go scotthorton.org/donate. There's also a PayPal for single donations, or you can sign up to do monthly donations on PayPal as well, and take all different kinds of digital currencies, especially Zencash, zensystem.io for Zencash, and of course all the different kinds of bitcoins and etc. like that. So check all that out at scotthorton.org/donate. And hey, by the way, if you like this show, review it for me on iTunes, Stitcher, etc. If you like the audiobook, it's now available on iTunes as well as audible.com. So leave a good review on there if you like that, and help get that out. Thanks.
Sorry I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Oh, we ain't killing their army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, bitch, say it 3 times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, introducing Nasser Arabi. He's a reporter from Sana'a, Yemen, and he runs Yemen Now, YemenAlan.com. Welcome back to the show, Nasser. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Scott.
Happy to have you back on the show. Really appreciate you joining us here. And now, there's been a massive escalation in the war. The United Arab Emirates and their mercenaries attacking the Hodeidah port. Can you please update us everything you know here?
Yes. Let me first clarify something. The battle in the western coast of Hodeidah is not new. It has started 32 months ago. They started with the Bab al-Mandab Strait, and they are in the same western coast of Yemen for 32 months so far. So it is not new. But what is new is the city of Hodeidah. We can say this, the city of Hodeidah, which has about 1 million people. The Emiratis, let me say this time, Emiratis in particular, not Saudis, the Emiratis jumped to a point which is 10 kilometers from the airport of the city of Hodeidah, from the sea. So this is the point that the people outside Yemen do not understand it very well. So the Emiratis forces came to a point close to the airport from the sea. Which this does not mean that they came along the coast, no, but they came from this point, Duraihimi, which is 15 kilometers from the airport of Hudaydah, and they opened a battlefront there, and now there are, I mean, the battle or the fierce clashes and the fierce battles are going on there for 5 days or 6 days now, which means they wanted just to strangle and to starve more and to strangle the Yemenis under the leadership of Houthi forces. They wanted to push them even more and more to the table, but with their conditions. So this is the very new thing only. And what is happening now is clashes, is battles, very, very, very adventurous and very reckless step. And, you know, a lot of tanks and armored are being destroyed, and a lot of invaders are being killed every hour or by hour. So, I mean, heavy, heavy human losses, military losses, I mean. And these losses may also include the city, if they wanted to, if the Emiratis wanted to move or to shift the battles into the city. They are very, very close to the city now. But as I told you, about 1 million people are there, and the board, the Emiratis cannot take control over the port, the harbor, without entering the city. Because the point I told you, they started from the point south of the airport, which is south of the city of Hudaydah. So they are going now towards the north, airport, city, and the port. So if they want, it would take a long time. It is not easy. And the Emiratis wanted it to be very easy, but it will not be very easy. It would take a lot of time if they want. But now, I think I can assess very honestly and very neutrally that Emirati forces are very in a big quagmire, a new quagmire, and they are entrapped, and they are even blockaded from three directions. They couldn't have any reinforcement from any place on the ground, because they have people in the ground, but they couldn't come. They couldn't have any reinforcement from the ground. They can only have reinforcement only from the sea, from the point they came from. So they are in a big problem. And if they couldn't, let me say very honestly, if they couldn't end it in 2 or 3 days, then they might all be killed. So this is the problem. And let's see what happens, because the top leader, the Houthi top leader, is speaking now on TV when you called me, and he said if they mean by this to push us or to push us to surrender, we will not surrender even if they came with the armies of the world, because we should defend our country from the occupation. It's occupation. And so this is the most important thing that I can see. I can tell you now, and I'll let you now ask the questions in your mind.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much for that update. So, well, one question is, is the Saudi-U.S. air war coinciding with this attack? Are they providing air cover in the same battle, or they're still just bombing Sana'a?
No, now that they are focusing on Hodeidah, because Hodeidah, they call it, or they consider it, the biggest ever since this aggression started about 4 years ago. So everything now is focusing there. But I told you, even though the first day, 1 week ago, they started to drop people from the sea, from the warships, and an Emirati warship was destroyed, because you know, if you come close, they would hit you. So they tried, but they failed. Now the only thing they have is only the point they entered from, which is 15 kilometers from 15 kilometers south of the airport. But no, on the ground, no place. No, I mean, they can't receive, as I told you, any reinforcement from any place. So they are blockaded from three directions, and they can only move in and out from the sea. There are people who are in the, for example, in Bab al-Mandab or in Al-Makha, or they can't reinforce, they can't help them, they can't give any more troops to help or to do anything. So this is the situation now.
Well, okay, so, I mean, skeptics before this attack started said, well, listen, the Houthis are only going to withdraw into the mountains and you're not really going to have much of a victory against them anyway. You're saying that the entire battle is tilted toward the Houthis at this point, and that they even threaten the entire army of the UAE that is opposed to them there, huh?
Let me tell you one important thing also that will help you to understand why they did this. Because the UN envoy was shuttling back and forth between Sana'a, Riyadh, and Abu Dhabi. He came here three times recently. Shuttling back and forth, as I told you, between Riyadh, Abu Dhabi, and Sana'a, trying to convince Houthi to surrender Hodeidah to United Nations or to any third party or whatever. They completely refused any new conditions. They just told him very clearly, until yesterday, he left only yesterday, the day before, here from Sana'a. They just told him, after the battles here on Hodeidah started, they told him, the condition we told you three or about 4 years ago in Geneva or everywhere are still the same. They told him very strongly and very confidently. And this is why Emirati was very embarrassed. And because Emirati would thought that the Houthis would agree on all conditions after they did this step in Hodeidah. But it is a big problem for them. I mean, it is only a beast of brave or a war forever, at least for Yemenis. For Houthis. Yes. So it is, Emirati now is in a very, very impasse, in a very difficult situation, that it wanted to do something to, the media, Emirati media is still saying everything that he controlled the airport, he controlled the city, while the reality is completely different, because the readiness and all the readiness of the Houthi fighters and the Yemenis in general who are working with Houthi are, you know, they say they did not start the battle yet, and they know how important it is, and if they want, they are ready to continue war inside the city or in the province or in the airport or wherever they want. It is not a day battle, as they said. It is not a swift battle, and it will not be at all.
And now, have they bombed the cranes and the infrastructure at the actual port? As they had
no,
done
let me let me tell you something. Let me also clarify something. The airport is completely destroyed from 4 years ago, or since about four years ago. I mean, since the very beginning of this aggression, right? The harbor or the port is partially destroyed because they bombed it many times. Now they did not strike the harbor during these 6 days at all, because it is very far from the battle. So they are focusing on the point which they are in. Mm-hmm. They think that if they take control of the airport, they would control the city. It is not right, because the airport now is like any place. It is any position, any place. I mean, it is not that important. And even though they couldn't do anything, they just keep bombing the airport now for 6 days, and they say we controlled it, and they didn't, because if they controlled it, they would show themselves there. They are not. And the Houthi leaders and the media people, they went many times there, and they said no, the airport is still there. But of course, you can't go there safely because they would bomb any time. They bomb all the time anyway, but they bomb any time. They couldn't move. They don't have enough troops. They are in a problem. So this is the situation.
Well, that's certainly an interesting take, and I'd take your word for it. I mean, certainly the Houthis have been underestimated going back for years and years here. And have held out. I mean, obviously the big story here is, you know, other than, you know, the recent developments on the ground, is what it's going to cost in humanitarian terms, because the Hodeida port is so important to food imports for the entire country. And so
what is not clear to also people outside is that Hodeida is fortified like Sana'a. And they have been around the airport of Sana'a for 4 years now. 4 years now. They mm-hmm. were 4 years ago, or let me say about 3 years ago, they were seeing the airport from the point they are now in the eastern part of Sana'a. They can see the airport of Sana'a, and they can also film it, and they can tell you, if you want to believe them, we can see the airport. The airport is in the ring of our artillery. The airport is in the ring of our snipers or whatever. And they are even now closer to the airport of Hodeida. But it is not easy if they want to have all that cost. And I'm not talking only about the civilian cost, United Nations estimated at 250,000 civilians who could be killed if the battle continues into the city. And we can even expect more, because there is no displacement. I mean, people don't displace because it is difficult. It is it is difficult to displace for many, many reasons, economic reasons and war and a lot of things. So they are staying there in the city. No one fled until now. And the people and the human rights groups and everyone know that if the battle started in the city, the Emiratis and Saudis and all invaders will be the losers, because Houthi people are very experienced for this kind of fighting, guerrilla fighting, and for the port, it is also fortified because they have their own missile, land-sea missile, that can prevent and stop any warship that from getting closer or from approaching the port. Like if you are in a mountain here in the eastern of Sana'a, that you can repel a very big army with just one Kalashnikov or with RPG or whatever, or mortars or whatever, because it's you are in a mountain. And it is the same, Hudaydah is also fortified, and they are now controlling the situation from three places, as I told you, from three places. I mean, the point which Emirati enter is blockaded from three directions. Only the sea direction is open for the Emirati invaders.
Well, and I've read, is it right that traditionally plain old Yemeni civilians have the right to bear arms, just like Texans, and so everybody has their own rifles?
The civilians, you mean?
Yeah. As compared to most countries where civilians don't have their own rifles. I've read that in Yemen, they really do.
As I told you, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an important point to clarify, because people say, what's it good for?
Also, one point is also that the city now is, you know, full of, of ditches and barricades and all kind of readiness. So if they want to choose, the city will just turn over to some kind of mountainous place and a new battle, but not easy. So Emiratis also would fail, if not failed until now, they would fail as they failed when Saleh was killed here in Sana'a, when they told him to switch against, to switch with the Saudi Emirati invaders.
All right, so now listen, as far as the future goes and some kind of possible ending to this war, I mean, we've seen that the Saudi and UAE goals are simply to win outright and put their guy back on the throne, which is obviously impossible, or, you know, to force the Houthis to the table, you know, very much on their terms, which doesn't really seem like they're in a position of strength to demand that, even in the smaller view as well as the larger view when you look at Hodeidah or look at the whole war, for example, here. But so what about the Houthi side? Because they've tried to take Aden and failed and withdrew. And I wonder, are they willing to say, you know, let us rule Sana'a and we won't take Aden and split the country in half? Or they're saying that they are determined to have total victory and consolidate power over the entire country?
This is what the Emirati is planning. It is very clear. But for Houthi, it is not like this, because it is completely different from Aden. Aden, Houthi did not have any popular incubator in Aden, because it's completely different culturally and a lot of things. But here it is, you know, Hudaydah is well connected with four or five important provinces that are directly connected with Hudaydah. And this is what Emirati mistakenly thought, that they would cut the reinforcement roads by bombings from the sky, and then Houthi would fail. But now everything is okay. Houthi were not worried when Emirati was approaching the airport, from the airport, or getting closer to the airport. No, Houthi fighters were focusing on their places. On their places, I mean, their positions that are connected with the provinces of Sana'a, Dhamar, Hajja, Sa'da, and all these places, because they wanted to continue the war. This is what they want. Easily, they want to continue the war, and they know that the Emirati is drowning foolishly. So they want him to drown. And it is not only this Tchibli. They capture, not only destroy, their armored vehicles, but they capture dozens of of Emirati armored vehicles are already captured, and everybody saw them on the social media or TV or whatever. They captured them because they had that chance to capture, not only to destroy or to set fire to them as they did every time. So they armed themselves from the invaders because they don't have any other place to help them or other place to have the reinforcement. They have only the sea, only. Even if they take their injured people or dead people, they take them through the sea only.
All right, hang on just one second. Hey guys, here's who sponsors this show. Mike Swanson and his great investment advice at WallStreetWindow.com. He's actually posting some stuff at the Libertarian Institute website now. Really great stuff. The great Mike Swanson. And he's also the author of the book, The War State, which is a really great history of the rise of the new right military-industrial complex after World War II in the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy eras. You'll really want to look at it. The War State by Mike Swanson. Also, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. If you listen to Mike, you'll be buying some metals. You'll want to buy them from Roberts & Roberts. They've been around as long as I've been alive. They've got a great reputation. They take the very smallest premium possible in order to help arrange the very best sales for you at platinum, palladium, gold, silver, of course, and no premium at all if you buy with Bitcoin. They're at Roberts & Roberts. That's rrbi.co. rrbi.co for your precious metals. There, as I mentioned before, Zen Cash. Zensystem.io to learn all about this great new digital currency, and which is also a secure messaging application and document transfer device and all the rest there. Learn all about it at Zensystem.io and read the book. It's by Hussein Badakhshani. It's How to Run Your Tech Business Like a Libertarian. That's not the title. The title is No Dev, No Ops, No IT. Those are all one word each, if you take my meaning. No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. It's really great. And check out libertystickers.com for all your anti-government propaganda. I made up most of them. And yeah, that didn't work out with the new website I kept promising you. But now supposedly someone else is promising one. So I guess we'll see if we ever get a new website. But there's still a lot of great anti-government propaganda, and you could buy it at libertystickers.com. Now, one more thing. Check out scotthorton.org. We've been having some server problems, but otherwise, scotthorton.org is a great-looking new website, as you can tell. And if you want a good 2018 model website for your business or for whatever you're doing, your opinions, check out expanddesigns.com, the great Harley Abbott over there. And if you go to expanddesigns.com/Scott, you'll save $500. But so, I mean, as you say, though, if the Houthis have so little support down near Aden, is it truly their goal to consolidate power over the whole country? Are they willing to compromise on that and have at least autonomy? Or, in other words, the Saudis and UAE seem to have an all-or-nothing set of goals here, and I wonder whether the Houthis are any more willing than them to compromise.
Yes, let me tell you what what outside wants, what Saudi and Emirati wants. They want two things, generally. Let me just, generally speaking. They want either United Yemen, United Yemen they make, not Yemenis make, or divided Yemen they make. I mean, they want the easy way. They want to control Yemen in a way or another, so they don't care about unity or division. No, what they care is how to control Yemen south and north. But it is not that easy. Emirati wants something and Saudi wants something, so they are conflicting. If they are in one mind in this, they would have obtained something. They would have achieved something. But they are in complete conflict. Now the Hudaydah battle, the new battle I told you about, it only started when Emirati went to Riyadh to satisfy or to abuse and placate Hadi, and to tell people that there is no problem between him and Emirat, because Emirat did not recognize even his legitimacy. But now before the Battle of Hudaydah, they locked, or they told the world that they come along, they get along, they have no problem anymore, Emirat and Hadi and Saudi Arabia. This is not right. This can't last. It is fake, and it will not last, I'm sure. If it is good thing, they would have done something. They would have even taken control over the airport, which is very near now. They are very close to them, and they control them at least from the air. But they couldn't, because they can't walk. They can't send the troops. They can't send the soldiers. They are afraid. So Saudi is different than Emirati, and Hadi is different from all, and they hate them all. I mean, Emirat and Saudi Arabia hate Hadi, and they don't like him, and they know that he is very, very weak, and they can't do anything. What he has is only the name of legitimacy, only, not more.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's certainly been clear even from the beginning of his presidency there, when they held the one-man election and everything. But you're still not answering exactly, though, my question, which is, what do the Houthis want, and what are they willing to settle for?
Yes, the Houthi, yes, when they, Houthi want to keep Yemen united, because Houthi is not representing himself.
Well, Houthi, as you said, though, when they tried to move on Aden, they really didn't have support from the people there. And so they backed off. They weren't going to be able to win and hold that territory. So
yes, yes, it is not that when I said popular support, I said popular support, the houses and all logistic things. But politically, Houthi have leaders of the separatist movement here in Sana'a who are even more important than those in Riyadh or in Abu Dhabi. So they are from the south, and they want to keep unity. They wanted to keep unity. They wanted only to correct what they call the bath of unity, to correct the bath of unity.
So what you're saying is then that the Houthis aren't interested in or don't need to conquer the South, because they have alliances forged with leaders in the South already, if the UAE would just butt out. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. I mean, the people, the southerner here in the capital Sana'a, whether normal people or leaders, they are more than any place. They are more even than Aden itself. And the UN envoy, when he comes here, he meets them, and he knows that there is also separation movement in Sana'a who are under Houthi leadership. So generally, Houthi wants to keep united Yemen. But if they want to ignore Houthi, whether by military solution or political solution or wherever, they couldn't do anything without Houthi. They couldn't do anything without Houthi also. I mean, the people, the outside, the United States, UK, France, who are supporting what they call the legitimate government, they can't do anything without Houthi. Houthi knows this, whether he is alone or with his political allies now. Houthi is not easy. Houthi now has the support of all the North. And when I say all the North, it is I'm speaking about 75% of the population, more than 75 of population of Yemen, south and north, are in the north. So they know that they need Houthi anyway. They need Houthi anyway in any state. They could not work without him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know what? Is it okay if we talk about a little bit of the history of how all this broke out? Because, you know, I remember, well, there's been quite a bit of journalism
about... Which one you mean? You mean south and north or what?
Yeah, well, okay, so for example, and I'm sure this is oversimplified to a degree, but Obama and the CIA really ratchet up the drone war in 2009, and they give a bunch of guns and money to Saleh, the dictator at the time, in order to, as basically the cost, the bribe, to let them wage their drone war against Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which I know you covered for the New York Times back then.
Yes.
And then... But Saleh then turned around and used the money and the guns to keep attacking the Houthis, but he kept losing. And they kept getting more and more powerful as the result, just as Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula got more and more powerful the more they bombed them with drones, the Houthis got more and more powerful the more Saleh used those guns that he was being bribed with against the Houthis. They grew in response to that, and all of that leading up to the Arab Spring and the Days of Rage and all this stuff in 2011. So, I mean, could you take us back to some of that, and do I have that right about the early cause and effect of this crisis?
Yes. See, let me start with the United States. Yes, United States was focusing from the very beginning on Qaeda. September 11, yes, since 9/11, they focused on Yemen for many, many reasons. For many, as a big threat to United States. So they, as you said, they supported Saleh to hunt Al Qaeda, but Saleh exploited them, unfortunately. And when Saleh was in war with Houthi, they supported him because they supported him at the time because Saudi Arabia wanted this to happen. Wanted this to happen because Houthi was, Houthi is a threat to Saudi Arabia because Houthi is in nearby Saudi Arabia or at the border with Saudi Arabia. So when Houthi won the war, not Saleh, Houthi proved that he was very strong because of the failure of Saleh and the failure of United States also. United States was supporting the wrong person at the time. So when they ended the war between Saleh and Houthi, then the other problem came that was the problem of the Brotherhood. The problem of Brotherhood. They wanted then to support Houthi against the Brotherhood. And even Saleh, when Saleh also was deposed and unseated from his presidency, he also tend to support Houthi help him against his rivals, Brotherhood rivals. So the Brotherhood was the rival or the enemy of Saudi Arabia, the enemy of Saleh, and even the enemy of everyone outside because they support Al Qaeda. Mm-hmm. Now, Saudi Arabia has the Brotherhood in its side, and United Arab Emirates has the separatists. They are enemies. They are completely enemies, but they say they are not. They are enemies. Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates are enemies because United Arab Emirates has the separatists, the South separatists, and Saudi Arabia has the Brotherhood, who are the enemy of United Arab Emirates. And this is why United States is supporting blindly and foolishly supported what is everything rebounds against the United States, everything in Yemen. So because it is now the support, the American support in Yemen is in favor of Qaeda, ISIS, the enemy of United States. They do not understand this because they feel they are they love, let me say, Trump loves Saudis and their money. They don't, he doesn't know what supporting Saudi Arabia means. It is supporting Saudi Arabia means supporting Brotherhood, which means supporting Qaeda and ISIS now.
Mm-hmm. And well, this and of is course, what's happening. I mean, and they keep doing strikes against Al Qaeda and ISIS too, and mostly just killing civilians when they try. But I guess that's how they, you know, tell themselves that it's okay to fight this war against Al Qaeda's enemies, the Houthis, is that, well, at least we're still doing the drone war and special forces wars against them.
Yes, they even talk about Iran as a big thing. Also, they talk, you know, they say Iran. Iran is, as I always told you, and as I have said all along, that it's Iran is just gaining and not losing anything because it's happy. Iran is very happy with what's happening here in Yemen now because it doesn't. Iran doesn't lose anything, and it's only getting happy because Saudi Arabia is being depleted and in a big attrition war, and so it's not even against Iran at all what they are doing at all.
And as you said before, all their claims about Iranian intervention there have actually done more to boost Iran's power and influence than anything they've actually done, which is credible. I mean, what are we supposed to believe? That they have a complete blockade on the country, but somehow Iran is getting missiles in? I mean, it's crazy to think so.
This is very crazy. This is very ridiculous. It is not because it's a big flaw. It's shame on them to say something like this because they know that every single ship is inspected by them everywhere. So how can the missiles how can you get the missiles in? No, it is not right at all. But it's just justification to continue their aggression. Not right.
Yeah. All right. Now, so take me back, though, to 2011 and 12, when all the protests broke out against Saleh. I mean, I think it was pretty much all different kind of factions, including the Houthis, wanted him gone. And before America and Saudi intervened and put Hadi on the throne, was there really an alternative, a compromise government that was coming into being there that Hillary and them forced out? Or, I mean, somehow, yeah, the field was open enough for them to get away with putting Hadi there, right?
Yes, there were two things. There were two things. One government after Saleh was forced from power, that is at the end of 2011, beginning of 2012. That was a government that was a Saudi-backed government, like the one that Saudi wanted now, exactly, with Brotherhood, right? Saudi-backed government, right? Mm. Then Houthi was completely against that government at the time, completely, like now, okay? So Houthi now has a big experience, politically, militarily, and everything. Mm-hmm. So he refused that, and he kept struggling alone. Brotherhood, who were in the square, in the Revolution Square, they said, okay, they were happy with the government, with the Saudi backed government. Houthi completely refused it publicly and privately and everything, right? And he kept struggling, protesting. Then he culminated his protests in what he called the revolution of 21 of September 2014. So this is the Houthi revolution. 21 of September 2014.
Well, and
when he took over Sana'a and unseated Hadi and the Brotherhood outside him.
Right. Well, and
so it is like this.
But also Saleh, when I guess see what happened was there was an assassination attempt, and so he was out sick for a while, and then when he came back, he went and allied with the Houthis.
You're right. This point is clear.
I should have army divisions with him. So talk more about that.
I should have mentioned this point because when Houthi refused the Saudi-backed government, he did not refuse Saleh because Saleh was already unseated. He refused Saudi-backed government and Hadi president and all those people. Saleh was very happy and he sided with Houthi, yes. He sided with Houthi until the end, until he was assassinated, until he switched the sides.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, last December when he tried to make a deal with the Saudis and stab the Houthis in the back. When it seemed like, and you know, you and I had at least joked about this on the show, that listen, if the Houthis can have an alliance with Saleh, and he's the former Saudi American puppet, then they can deal with him too. So why not put him back on the throne or one of his guys as a compromise deal? And then instead of doing that, instead of saying, hey, let me be ally of both, he tried to turn on the Houthis and make a deal with the Saudis behind their back. And so then the Houthis killed him.
This was the biggest mistake in his life, unfortunately, the biggest ever, because maybe because of his age or whatever, you know, I respected him, I supported him, I always considered him as a witful, as a very smart, but in this step he was very stupid because he did not calculate anything at all. He didn't even plan for what would happen at the door of his house. So it was a big mistake.
Yeah. All right. Well, so man, it seems like overall a pretty big stalemate. And with the Americans, the Saudis, the UAE refusing to back down. But you're saying that back to the original point here about this battle at Hodeidah port. You're saying that it looks to you like the UAE and their forces are going to lose here and be forced to retreat rather than the Houthis are going to have to head for the hills. And
This is if they want to sacrifice the city and the population of the city and everything. They would also lose. And they would not take control over Hodeidah without war at all. And the war would be very long, like any war, like the Sana'a, and even more difficult. Because now they know, Houthi knows that Hodeidah, handing over Hodeidah is like handing over Sana'a. No difference. And even more important, Hodeidah is very more important. So it's, you know, to die is better than to be a slave. This is the slogan that Yemenis are now raising, like the Vietnamese people when they raised the slogan in 1968 when American invaded them.
Well, and importantly, you're saying that the population of Hodeidah, because they're just so poor, and I guess because of the geography, they really can't flee. And so then
they can't flee, yes, but they turn over. They tend the two fighters, everyone. So poverty is with two faces. So they can't do anything. But where can they go? They can go to battles, just to fight. And this is what's happening. And not only this, people from everywhere, but the people of Hodeidah is the second largest in terms of population, the second largest after Taiz, about 4 million. Hodeidah, not the city, Hodeidah the province also. So about 4 million.
Well, but Nasser, I mean, are you worried that if things go this well for Houthis and then with civilian militias rising up to support them, that maybe that'll really unleash a massive air war? Because the Saudis, the Americans will just, they'll agree with you in a cynical way and say, yep, see, they're all insurgent fighters, and so they're not civilians any longer. Now we can bomb their whole city.
Yes, but they are very foolish. I'm expecting something like this to happen, but to push you around this way, you would sacrifice anything. You would sacrifice anything, not only Yemenis, anyone. So they're just pushing around now. Pushing around this way is very hurting and not acceptable, and it makes people even more determined to fight and to resist and not to surrender. Because it's, you know, I want to tell you that Houthi and all people who support Houthi like me, we talk about peace all the time also. We want peace for everyone, but Saudi Arabia does not want peace. It wants also a peace in its way. It wants to form Yemeni government in the way that would serve Saudi Arabia only. And not only serve, form government, but first of all, they want you to surrender completely, and then to go to the prison, they lock you inside, and then they would tell you what you want, or they would give you. This is what Saudi Arabia want. They wanted to complete surrender and they give everything and then go, just walk. You walk into the prison, they lock you in, and then they tell you what they can tell you, what they want or what they could do for you. This is what Saudi Arabia wants. It's very easy. It's very difficult and not easy to accept.
Yeah. Listen, I understand your point of view on that. No doubt Americans would feel the same way in the same position. And now listen, before I let you go, can you just talk a little bit more about...
And by the way, it's the same thing since four years. It's the same point Saudi raises and the same point Houthi raises every day. And to the extent that people outside of the observers, some analysts from outside Yemen, they say, both sides are overconfident of this and of this. No, it's a matter of dignity also. The Yemenis at the end of the day, they don't have anything to lose. They don't have anything to lose now, but they want to live in a dignity and freedom, and they sacrifice. So it is not easy. So the more the longer the war, the harder it gets, the yeah. solution gets.
It's, you know, it's important and interesting to see too that, you know, we know the Houthis are not the majority of the country at all, and yet we certainly have the same as America experienced after September 11th. Of course, that rally around the leader and rally around the flag when you're being attacked.
They
by
are
foreign
not
power.
Majority. Houthi are not majority, yes, but they are leaders now, and they have popularity.
I mean, that's really an important point, because I think the Americans would try to say that, yeah, we're going to try to, you know, get the Yemeni
people to blame the Houthis
for their
don't
plight.
Understand the, many people outside don't understand that Houthi are indigenous people. They are Yemenis, 100%. So, and the majority is... is majorities. Saleh was a minority. Saleh was only one family, and he was ruling Yemen. How Saleh ruled Yemen. So Houthi now is a family or a sect. So, but he's leading now. He's leading in a way or another.
Yeah. All right, listen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you continuing to come on the show and keep us up to date on the war there, Nasser. Thank you again.
But I can't thank you enough for your interest in Yemen. Thank you very, very much for your interest in Yemen and for helping. This is a very good thing to help Yemen by the word, by spreading the word.
Okay, take care. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, y'all, that's Nasser Arabi. It's Yemen Alan, yemennow.com. And reporting from Sana'a, Yemen. All right, you guys, and that's the show. You know me, scotthorton.org, youtube.com/ScottHortonShow, libertarianinstitute.com. scotthorton.org and buy my book, and it's now available in audiobook as well. Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. Hey, it's endorsed by Ron Paul and Daniel Ellsberg and Stephen Walt and Peter Van Buren and Matthew Ho and Daniel Davis and Anand Gopal and Patrick Coburn and Eric Margolies. You'll like it. Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. And follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Thanks, guys.